How do you democratically govern a country that has no real history of it? How do you secure the peace when your fighters are already turning on each other before Gaddafi is gone? Can the West afford to get involved? Can the West afford not to get involved? All points I've put earlier on to Daniel Serwer, professor at Johns Hopkins School of Advanced International Studies, and also to Nabila Ramdani, who specialises in Anglo-French issues and Islamic affairs in the Arab world. I asked them, given the difficulties of introducing government in Afghanistan and Iraq, did they think that the Libyans could really do it by themselves?
I don't think it's going to be easy. I think they're going to need a lot of help. It's a 5 to 10 year project, not a 5 to 10 month project. There are things they can achieve in the near term. I think they've laid out a timeline by which they would prepare a constitution within 6 months, elections within a year. That seems a little bit fast to me, but if it's too fast, they'll postpone. There's a much longer time frame required for rebuilding the institutions of the state, developing civil society, and moving Libya in a democratic direction.
Does the West, does NATO need to stay involved?
I would hope that NATO wouldn't stay involved, but I believe that the European Union has serious obligations here. European oil and gas supplies, the possibility of Libyan migrants to Europe, these make Libya vital interest from the European perspective, and I believe that the EU could do a great deal to help the Libyans build their state, but it should be done in support of the Libyans, not by design in Brussels.
Nabila Ramdani, recent Western history is littered with bad examples of nation building. Is that any reason not to give it a go?
Absolutely. I think, you know, Libya is certainly an extremely rich country. It's also full of natural talents, native talents. And that's precisely why, you know, the future of the Libyans should be left, you know, to the Libyans. They are, as the professor said, huge challenges ahead, not least of all, you know, the immediate concern would be the management of security and indeed policing. The number one duty of any state is the protection of its citizens, and the sight of, you know, young men carrying guns around doesn't bode well, you know, in terms of security when it comes to, you know, the protection of people. We've just, you know, seen this morning rebels killing each other by mistake, for example. And Libya at the moment must be, you know, one of the countries in the world where you have the highest amount of guns per capita. So that's absolutely daunting. And there's, of course, you know, all sorts of things going on, such as looting, summary executions. And, you know, that is certainly...
Indeed they are. It's a very, very febrile situation. What makes you think, though, that if it took 2,500 NATO air sorties to help the rebels dislodge Gaddafi, that it's not going to take NATO to help the rebels secure the peace?
Well, I think NATO played a crucial role in, you know, back helping the leading, in fact, the rebels to this stage. We're very close to, you know, the Gaddafi regime is definitely crumbling. It's the end. It's you know, just a matter of hours or days now to see the complete end of it all. But it doesn't mean that, you know, the situation is sorted. Far from it. And the second huge challenge ahead would be to reconcile and unite a country where you have deeply entrenched rivalries. And we're already seeing, you know, conflicts between the various tribes, the various factions within the rebel group, even within people fighting on the same side, vying for control over the oil revenue, for example. Some factions within the rebel group is already claiming that they have done much of the fighting and hence should be running the country. So that's something that's not going to be easy to achieve. But and this is, you know, the other huge problem that Libya is facing, to reconcile, you know, all these various interests.
Daniel Serwer, no matter what best intentions any Western country might have in trying to assist in securing the peace, this would be, because of recent history, a Western army or Western military advisors or political advisors going into the Arab world, and it would probably have the look and taste of an army of occupation. Isn't that something that they would be best advised to avoid?
I think they should avoid it if at all possible. But what we need now is a new Security Council resolution that lays out a set of goals that the Libyans want to achieve. And then you design what you do by way of support in accordance with those goals. And you only send, and I would think it would be police rather than army, you only send international assistance in the way of uniformed people if the Libyans ask for it and if it's consistent with the goals and required to achieve the goals. I think we have to be very deliberate about this and keep everybody on the same page. Nabila is, of course, correct. There's a lot of confusion today in Tripoli. Part of the role of the international community is to keep its eye on the ultimate goals, to keep its eye on the on that 10-year time frame, and to help the Libyans to achieve what they need to achieve over not just the next few months, but the next decade.
Nabila Ramdani, it would be preferable if they were to ask for any assistance, but the National Transitional Council is probably unlikely to do that, aren't they? Should they be encouraged?
No, I think next move should be, when there's some sense of stability restored in the country, is to work, is that the Libyans between themselves should work between the development and the promotion of civil society, involving, you know, its own citizens in the reconstruction, first of all, of the country. You know, there's an awful lot to do on that front in terms of rebuilding the infrastructures. We're looking at, you know, the state of hospitals, for example. There's clearly a humanitarian crisis going on at the moment as well. And there's, dare I say, there's huge potential, again, in Libya. Libya has
there
the
is, but only if they can secure the peace. And we haven't really gotten to the bottom of this issue, have we, of how they are going to be able to do that without some kind of foreign assistance.
I think this will happen through a very a layout towards working towards a good governance, transparency and accountability. The Libyans should feel that there's a sense that, you know, the extraordinarily revenues, the extraordinarily high revenues from oil are going to be redistributed fairly to the Libyan people. And that's, in my opinion, is an encouragement for any Libyan citizen to take part in the reconstruction of their own country. So I think that, I think we should be trust the Libyan people, but that trust will only come with, you know, the terms laid out by the National Transitional Council. We'll see what it has to offer. Let's not forget that it's an unelected body. It's mainly made up by, Gaddafi's former lieutenants. So they have, of course, very strong ties with the old guard. And that's not, in my opinion, reassuring. So that's why, why should the Libyan people, who have now freed themselves from 42 years of despotic rule, trust an unelected body which has very strong ties with the past?
Daniel Serwer, that is a problem, really, isn't it? And it's going to take more than another United Nations Security Council resolution to avoid slipping back into another totalitarian or despotic regime.
Yes, there's a real risk here. But the press has been criticizing the National Transitional Council for being a hodgepodge, of being having secularists and Islamists, having Easterners, Westerners, young people, old people. I believe that what the Transitional National Council needs is, in fact, to be a hodgepodge and to be the broadest possible tent for Libyans while they write the rules of the game. The rules of the political game are in a constitution. That's what determines how power is distributed in the institutional structures. And I think having as many people and as many different perspectives involved as possible is a good thing, not a bad thing.
Yes, but I have to say, for example, where I get worried about credibility of the National Transitional Council to move towards democratic ruling is when, for example, I hear the National Transitional Council encouraging or appealing to Gaddafi's inner circle to either capture him or kill him. Now, it doesn't bode well, in my opinion, for the democratic future of Libya when you have the NTC calling for Gaddafi's head. And this approach doesn't reflect a belief in the rule of law and due process. Surely they should be calling for his capture, yes, but not for his killing. The whole point of, you know, a successful rebellion is not to substitute one despotic regime for another one.
Was it not two businessmen as opposed to the National Transitional Council who made this call or offered this bounty?
The National Transitional Council called for the same thing in an indirect manner by offering amnesty to members of Gaddafi's inner circle for either capturing or indeed killing Gaddafi. So it amounts to the same thing.
I might have personally preferred that they call for only his capture too. But, you know, if you believe that Libyans have to be in the lead and that the National Transitional Council is the legitimate authority, then you have to stand back and let them make their own mistakes, if I can call them that.
The National Transitional Council is already conducting something of a whistle-stop tour of European capitals, reassuring the governments in those countries that it will be more or less business as usual. The contracts that they had signed with the Gaddafi regime will be honoured, and that they can all start making money as soon as the oil gets flowing again. Does that leave a slightly nasty taste in your mouth, Nabila?
Well, I think it's we're already, you know, hearing and seeing that, you know, foreign investors are getting impatient about the situation in Libya. And of course, there's no question that anybody would consider investing in that country until, you know, this a restoration of law and order. That's, a start. And as I said earlier, in my opinion, the Libyans should be extremely careful, or the new government should be really careful in not bringing contractors from abroad, but using native talents. The biggest problem in the Arab world today is idle young men without jobs. And as a matter of fact, Libya has the highest literacy rate in North Africa, and 83% of the population is literate. They're highly trained, especially when it comes to technical skills involving engineering and petroleum industries, precisely because that's what Libya does at best. So, if you open up the country to foreign investors and foreign contractors, then surely over time there will again be a sense of social injustice and the fact that, you know, there will be problems as to the redistribution of wealth.
Same question to both of you to finish. If you had to project 5 years down the line, will we be looking at a new North African superpower on Europe's shores or a failed state on Europe's shores? Daniel.
Neither one of those options. I think Libya can be a middle-sized, prosperous, relatively democratic state in North Africa, bordered, I hope, by other democratic states. It won't be a superpower, and I don't think it'll be a failed state either.
Nabila?
I think Libya certainly has, you know, huge potential to become a superpower, not only in terms of its financial resources and what it has to offer business-wise, but it also has the potential to develop into a democracy over time. But, of course, this has everything to do with who is going to run the country, who is going to be in charge. And in my opinion, if the West is seen to interfere yet again in the affairs of a Muslim country, it doesn't bode well for the future of Libya.
Nabila Ramdani and Daniel Serwer.